The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Tokers and Tokettes, it is Wednesday, August 22nd, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We are working on getting some new stuff plugged in here to the system, so if things sound a little weird, please forgive us. We're getting all the kinks worked out, but should be worked out here pretty soon. Also joining us here in the studio, over in the engineer's desk, we got Brian the Red hanging out. How you doing, Brian?
I am doing just fine there, Russ. There we go.
There we go.
Hey.
We've rearranged things here in the studio so we have a little bit better control over our calls when we call out to people on Skype. Should be easier for us to hear them and for them to hear us, so we still have to set some levels. If you folks in the chat room and let us know how things sound, we will adjust that during the break. So thanks so much. This is what it's like when you're doing it live. Speaking of doing it live, we got a great show for you today here on the Russ Belville Show. We've got more highlights from Seattle Hemp Fest coming to you. We've got videos from Lynette Shaw from her dispensary. You know, she's going to tell her story in one of the panels, the Victims' Rights panel. Also, we've got booth coverage of Danny Danko at the High Times booth, Keith Strop at the Normal booth, and Herb Thrasher at the Herb Thrasher booth, the Herb Age Designs booth, that is. So you'll get to see what it kind of looks like from a vendor's perspective and a nonprofit perspective at the Seattle Hemp Fest. Also today, it's Wednesday, so we do our regular cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. So at half past, you'll be able to get on the phone and talk to Dr. Mitch at 971-533-7111. Or you can join us in our chat room at ncr420.com. Get your chat questions in for Dr. Mitch. He can answer just about anything on cannabis science, history, culture, and health if we've got the data for it. So check that out at the bottom of the hour. And then also we've got our Daily Toker Tunes. Today is Irie Wednesday, so we're going to be bringing you some reggae music. And Brian the Red, I'll turn this one over to you because it's somebody you know quite well. Rocker T was live there at Seattle Hemp Fest.
Yeah, a good friend that used to... I'm a little hot now. Yeah, a friend used to be on my dad and my radio show whenever he came to town. He's an excellent reggae artist. He always brings, you know, what we call the hardcore rhythms. You know, it's just lovely sounds and good beats and excellent lyrics, and you should really check them out if you haven't yet. Rocker T.
Yeah, so we'll get to Rocker T here at the 20 after break. Check that out. And then at the second hour today on Toker Talk Radio, I'm going to be bringing you the panel from the Legalize It movie. We interviewed Martin Katsir, the director, and Dan Katsir, the director, and he had a panel from some of the stars of the movie, including Dan Rush, Amanda Rain, and others who were a part of the Prop 19 campaign. This Legalize It movie is all about Prop 19, how they got so close to legalizing marijuana, and how it hurt so bad when they were set back. Also, they get a good look at some of the no on Prop 19 people. And it's kind of a nice lesson, considering what's going on in Washington State right now, where people are fighting against legalization that is on the ballot in Washington State. If the Legalize It movie doesn't teach them the lesson of take advantage of your opportunities while you have them, I don't know what else will. So all that's coming up on today's Russ Belville Show and Toker Talk Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
Yeah.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ. On the Russ Belville Show.
Walking over by the lake, and I just see everybody casually smoking weed like it's all right. Like it's supposed to be like that.
Because it is all right.
Like you ain't got to worry about no police coming and asking you what you smoking or what are you doing here, or let me see your driver's license. See, that's how they do it in Amsterdam. Everybody's just out there chilling. Ain't nobody stressing. You go buy your weed at the shop, you go kick it, smoke your weed, walk the street, do whatever you want to, and you.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Cannabis Carey is working on her KMUN pledge drive. I'm Radical Russ here with your Daily Cannabis Chronicle. Medical marijuana measure okayed for the Arkansas ballot. This from the San Francisco Gate, Little Rock, Arkansas. A proposal to legalize medical marijuana has been approved for the November ballot in Arkansas. The Secretary of State's office on Wednesday said that Arkansans for Compassionate Care had turned in enough signatures to qualify the proposed initiated act for the November ballot. The proposal needed at least 62,507 signatures from registered voters to qualify. The group fell short in the number of signatures needed last month, but it was given additional time to circulate petitions. The proposal would allow Arkansans with qualifying conditions to purchase marijuana from nonprofit dispensaries with a doctor's recommendation. Qualifying conditions include cancer, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, and Alzheimer's disease. The proposal acknowledges that marijuana is illegal under federal law. Well, of course, this is a fantastic news that we get coming out of the first southern state to place a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot. And a lot of the reason why Arkansas is ready to do this and the people are ready to vote on this is because Arkansas residents have been trying various measures, various municipal initiatives for a long time now. Fayetteville, Arkansas, Little Rock, the activists have been starting at the very grassroots, at the very ground level, trying to change things in their own colleges, in their own towns. And they built that activist base, they built that volunteer corps, and they built that mission and message to the point where it finally could coalesce as a statewide grassroots effort to get medical marijuana on the ballot. Big thanks to MPP for their donations for helping this going. Ryan Denham with Arkansans for Compassionate Care for having the stewardship to lead it through, and for all of the great folks that are working in Arkansas to make this change. The medical marijuana ad ban gets final approval in Denver. All outdoor medical marijuana ads are now officially banned in the city of Denver, Colorado. On Monday night, the Denver City Council voted unanimously 12-0 to ban marijuana dispensaries from advertising on, quote, billboards, posters, bus benches, or with windshield leaflets and sign twirlers, according to the Denver Post. Marijuana businesses can still advertise in print, television, radio, and online, but will have to include a disclaimer that clearly indicates the products being advertised are for registered Colorado medical marijuana patients only, the Associated Press reports. The council's Debbie Ortega and Christopher Herndon are behind the proposal, which is an expansion of a May plan by Ortega that called for a ban on medical marijuana ads within 1,000 feet of schools, daycares, and parks after she received complaints from constituents, Westward reports. This alternate plan of Ortega's was voted down Monday night as well. The Denver medical marijuana community is divided on the issue. The Associated Press reports that Colorado attorney Lenny Freeling, the executive director of Colorado normal, and an outspoken marijuana legalization advocate, didn't want marijuana singled out like this, saying, quote, "I don't think any medicines should be advertised, period, end of story. Whether it's medical marijuana or something that will give me an erection for 8 hours, I find it all inappropriate. Ban it all, or don't ban any of it," end quote. However, most of Denver City Council's members disagreed with Freeling and do not want to give medical marijuana businesses the ability to advertise, just not in the over-the-top way that some have been. "We are still allowing advertising," Councilman Herndon, one of the backers of the ad ban, said. "We just don't want it in your face." Now, when you get a story like this, it's always tough because you're talking about the First Amendment and the right of businesses to advertise. And I kind of agree with Lenny Freeling on this. If I have to watch that couple one more time in the bathtubs talking about how horny they're going to get with the Levitra, the Viagra, or whatever the hell it is. If we have to drive by Coors Field day after day in Denver, Colorado, I don't see why it's such a big deal for the advertising of medical marijuana. Now, there have been some that have gone a little too far with the advertising sign spinners, you know, girls in bikinis. I mean, I would be a little suspicious, too, if I was driving by, say, a dentist's office and they had a sign spinner on there talking about how I could get, you know, free nitrous oxide. You know, if they were touting how high I would get from the nitrous oxide, you might look at that a little askance. But, you know, considering what's allowed in advertising these days, it just seems strange to me that we would, you know, focus on medical marijuana to the detriment of the industry when we don't do that with other industries. However, to be fair, to the people in the neighborhoods who, you know, voted for medical marijuana and maybe didn't expect it to turn into a pot leaf on every corner, to be fair to them, I like that the medical marijuana industries group is trying to cooperate with these people and trying to find a workable solution. I think the Denver solution here has gone a little too far and needs to be walked back a little bit and return a little bit more freedom to the advertising of medical marijuana. And we'll just keep an eye on this and make sure that our activists on the ground there in Colorado can do something to strike a fair balance. This from CBS News on the Money Watch. Feds crack down on Southern California medical marijuana, Los Angeles. Federal prosecutors on Tuesday expanded their crackdown on California medical marijuana dispensaries, filing 3 lawsuits and sending warning letters to more than 60 clinics in 2 Orange County cities. The asset forfeiture lawsuits filed against landlords who own buildings that house 6 marijuana shops in Anaheim, and the letters order the closure of the clinics or possible criminal charges will be filed. More than 300 pot stores and grows have been targeted in the Central District of California, which stretches from Santa Barbara to San Bernardino counties, since October, when the state's 4 U.S. attorneys announced an effort to curb dispensaries. Prosecutors argue dealers and suppliers are using the state's medical pot law, approved in 1996, as legal cover for running sophisticated drug trafficking ventures in plain sight. Marijuana remains illegal under federal law. Medical marijuana advocates argue the collectives are protected by California law, which allows the drug to be cultivated and supplied to ill people on a nonprofit basis. The crackdown comes amid a shift by municipalities and law enforcement agencies that say that clinics are abusing the law and in some cases overrunning neighborhoods. Last month, the Los Angeles City Council voted to ban as many as 900 storefront dispensaries in the coming weeks. A medical marijuana trade group has since sued the city, claiming the ban violated constitutional rights. Activists are also working to qualify a ballot measure to repeal the ban. In all, 66 warning letters were sent to marijuana dispensaries in Anaheim and La Habra. Some have closed recently, but federal authorities said 38 remain open. Well, again, this throwing out the baby with the bathwater, right? Let's ban the dispensaries. Some of them are bad. Some of them aren't doing what they should do. So let's ban all of them, even the good ones, even the guys that are following the rules, that are contributing to their local communities, that are trying to help with charities and so forth. Let's just throw them all out. Let's just ban them all. And once again, this just comes from this misunderstanding of what marijuana is and what it means to communities. And these outright bans don't make marijuana go away. These outright bans do not suddenly make patients well again. All this does is take people who over the past 14 years have become accustomed to being able to find accessible, usable, quality medicine in a lighted, well-run, secure place, And it forces them now to have to go back to the black market, to have to go back to trying to find the guy, driving around town, waiting hours to get medicine of questionable quality, to take the chance on getting ripped off or overcharged. See, this is just so maddening that we've gone this half step of medical marijuana. And when some people take that step, they take the inch and they take it a mile, and they overreach with, you know, again, the sign twirlers and the, you know, the specials for medicine and stuff, and they get this pushback from the people. This is what we're dealing with now, is the fact that we've kind of, as medical marijuana, once it became, you know, a system, people kind of went overboard with it. They kind of jumped over what people's expectations of what medical marijuana would be. And we are now seeing the backlash. We're seeing the pendulum swing back against this over-proliferation of medical marijuana. Now, when I say over-proliferation, of course, I'm talking about their perspective. From our perspective, we know marijuana is the safest therapeutically active substance known to man. We know there are millions of Americans out there who have yet to get access to it, who could have so much benefit from using medical cannabis. It's not that there's too few medical marijuana patients, it's too few medical marijuana patients out there. With all of the maladies and ailments and injuries that medical marijuana can help, it should be the medicine of first resort. But of course, we live in this bizarro backwards world where the most harmful drugs, alcohol and tobacco, have been made over the counter, not even scheduled. And the least harmful drug out there, marijuana, is Schedule One and subject to felony time if you try to grow it. Another news from the San Francisco Gate: Ohio officer charged in pot smuggling scheme. From Cincinnati, Ohio, a veteran of a small suburban Cincinnati police force has been indicted on federal charges of conspiring to smuggle marijuana across the country through methods that included hiding it in the gas tanks of cars. Byron Rose, a officer in North College Hill, is among 11 men indicted on charges of conspiring to bring hundreds of kilograms of marijuana to southern Ohio from Texas, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office for Ohio's Southern District. The indictment, unsealed Tuesday, charges all of the men, eight from Southwest Ohio and three from Texas, with conspiracy to distribute and possessed with intent to distribute marijuana. Rose is also charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering, and illegally structuring financial transactions, according to the indictment. Rose, age 42, told the North College Hill Police Department about the allegations Tuesday and was placed on unpaid leave pending the case's outcome. Police Chief Gary Faust said, quote, "None of this alleged conduct was done in performance of his duties, but our obligation is to the community," end quote, Faust said Wednesday. He said the city of about 10,000 has an expectation of being able to, quote, "have confidence and trust in their police department." Some of those involved in the conspiracy also laundered money from the trafficking by buying 11 pieces of real estate and a boat. Conviction of conspiracy to distribute and possess marijuana with the intent to distribute could net each defendant from 10 years to up to life in prison. Conspiracy to commit money laundering and are each punishable by up to 20 years in prison, and the illegal financial transactions are punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Well, once again, we see that the drug war corrupts. It corrupts law enforcement on all sides of the border. They bring these stories up every now and then about a United States cop getting busted for this thing. And for every one of these you hear, you know there's 5 or 10 out there that never get caught. There's always that little bit of marijuana that never makes it back to the evidence locker. There's always cops running around with just a little too nice of clothes and cars for what an officer's salary ought to be. We need to end marijuana prohibition. So this kind of corruption cannot occur. We cannot keep putting this temptation in front of the police officers, where they think of drug users and marijuana users as the scum of the earth, lowlifes, and they feel like there's no moral problem with taking their stuff, taking their marijuana, and benefiting from the trade in marijuana. A lot of them think, well, if somebody's going to make money, it might as well be a good guy like me.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots, you know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
will have you.
All right, when we come back, we're going to turn things over to Brian the Red. He's going to give us some live music from Rocker T at this weekend's Seattle Hemp Fest. Stay tuned. Your Daily Toker Tunes are up next.
He would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Come to Seattle, the greenest city on Earth, on September 14th, 15th, and 16th to celebrate the greenery of the Pacific Northwest. That's right. High Times Magazine is hosting the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in the Emerald City. Top businesses of the cannabis industry will be in attendance, showcasing cultivation gear, paraphernalia, stoner apparel, and more. Check out the finest cannabis products of the medical cannabis industry. Meet High Times cultivation editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido. They'll teach you how to grow top-grade ganja. And Elise McDonough will be there too. She's the author of the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook. Be there for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when High Times honors the top sativas, indicas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates submitted by Washington's top dispensaries. And don't forget the High Times Bash for VIPs on Friday night, one major party with top musical guests. Go to medcancup.com for details. Come to Seattle for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup on September 14th, 15th, and 16th at Fremont Studios. The Russ Belville Show brings you the best in Daily Toker Tunes every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy Vermoocher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
I'm a ganja planter. Call me the ganja farmer.
Groovin' Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Friday.
Something like to hit the ball.
Then on weekends, we mix them all together in our weekend music party. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, man. We are going to get Irie for this Irie Wednesday with one of the best out there, one of the great rockers in reggae, Rocker T. And for this, we turn things over to Brian the Red, who knows far more about this than I do. Try that again, Brian.
Okay, well, Rocker T, he's originally from New York, and he played with the High Times Cannabis Cup Band for several years. He's one of the original members of the High Times Cannabis Cup Band. I first met him back in the late 90s, and every time he came to Portland, we made sure to have him on our show. That's me and my father. We had a reggae show on KBOO Radio, it was a local community radio here in town. But great stuff, really good vocals, he always brings it, his live shows are so great. You can check out some of his videos from past performances here in town if you search Portland Hemp Stock on YouTube. There's some good videos of him. Rocker T and Portland Hempstock. You can just search those together and come up with some really good videos.
All right. Well, let's get to it. This is from the main stage. And, Brian, you did the work on this video-wise?
Yeah, set the video up on that. We got some video from a couple other angles with our buddy Iko, and we'll be mixing this all together and having a final video, too, once we get that done.
All right. Well, let's enjoy it. This is some Rocker T live at Seattle Hemp Fest main stage.
Stand away, revolution, man. Oh. Selassie the first. Jah! Rastafari. We love you, mama. Woo! Yes, I.
Love you!
Bigger up forever.
Dirt.
Seattle Hemp Fest started a long time ago.
Dirt.
And this is a beautiful event.
Dirt.
And it's not just about smoking weed.
Dirt.
It's about talking about hemp. It's about
Dirt.
Learning about the culture
Dirt.
That we need to put into effect
yeah.
on this planet. And the act of smoking herb, being illegal or being a crime, is a definite sign that something is totally amiss in our system. So I'm not going to go on about it long. Blazing up in public is activism, for sure. But we're not into the ism schism. We're into the love, the one love of the world. So the reality is, just turn to your brothers and sisters, even if you don't know them, and know them. And that's humanity evolving. And that's what we're doing. And there's so many of us that all this Babylon confusion will never succeed. It will never win. This wicked system is bound to fall. And all of us are going to be all right as long as we look to each other as brothers and sisters and say, I love you. So I love you all. Yes, I. We love you all. Yes, I. I'm going to make it. Give me, I'm going to make it.
Music from Rocker T. What song was that? I heard True Ganjaman in there earlier, Brian.
That was
Sorry about that.
Sorry, that's okay. That's too many new buttons. That was actually a medley of a couple of his different tracks, and he actually pulled a lyric from another person's song as well. But, you know, that's just how he is. He's got so much energy. He just always brings good vibrations.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will have Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line.
Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information.
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky roller rink, roller rink, roller rink.
Oh, yeah. This is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on National Cannabis Radio.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is 32 after the hour, and we're visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
All right, and I'm going to boost you up there so we can hear you just a little bit better. And when we get started on these segments, we do this every Wednesday. I always like to give Dr. Mitch a chance to fill us in on any new studies or polls that might have come out about marijuana. So what's new in the science, Dr. Mitch?
It's odd. It's one of those things that's not so new, but always good to see. We've got another longitudinal data set showing no link between cannabis use and depression. Yet again, we see that at least adult cannabis users don't seem to be developing depression at a rate higher than non-users. And any concerns about wild self-medication leading to subsequently worse depression or anything like that is just clearly not supported. And then another researcher in Australia is now trying to do a meta-analysis of all of the studies on this. And it seems like this is a consistent enough finding now that we can honestly say if there is a link between depression and cannabis, it's usually just the product of medical people using and being depressed because of a medical condition, or people trying to self-medicate depression. It's not that cannabis has caused this disorder.
And this study specifically was looking at younger people, right?
And I think that's the beauty of it. It gives a chance to see that this is the case. Now, you know, we've said time and again we don't recommend cannabis use for teens, but it's not a big issue for adults, particularly when we're talking about depression.
Mm-hmm. There was another story I saw that popped up on the science radar, and it was this study out of Yale University where they're saying, hold on now, all this talk about gateway drug, it might actually be true. What's the latest on this one?
In fact, it's really hard to do these now without trying to get better statistical or scientific control. The notion of cannabis as a gateway drug was this sort of idea that cannabis was going to make you crave hard drugs the way salt makes you thirsty or something like that. And they keep getting slipperier and slipperier with that definition, but that's really what they're trying to imply. We do have some data sets that show folks who use cannabis first are more likely to use hard drugs, but that's really a product of an underlying sensation-seeking or disinhibited personality style. And in fact, you find out these are often some of the same people who don't wear their seat belts or like to ride the front car or the roller coaster. And obviously, cannabis does not make you jump in the roller coaster.
Very good. All right, we're going to go to our chat room now where we're live with various listeners who have questions for Dr. Mitch. If you want to get your question in, just go to ncr420.com at 3:30 p.m. Pacific every Wednesday. That's when we're doing this live, and you can get your question in. And our first question here comes from, let's see, pull this back up. Oh, from Gothic Prophet, who says, I saw a report of a study out of the UK supposedly proving a link between cannabis psychosis and addiction. Anything on that UK study, Dr. Mitch?
It's curious if it's the one I'm thinking of. All they're trying to say is folks who are at risk for cannabis-related magical ideation or odd experiences to cannabis also seem to be at risk for developing dependence symptoms, particularly tolerance and withdrawal. It's not a stunning finding, but I do feel like what that's saying basically is people who are prone to problems are prone to problems. And so I can't make a whole lot out of this saying there's something wild about cannabis so much as, guess what, some people run into trouble.
Some people have a tough life. Okay.
Exactly.
We have a question that came in from email that I had missed the last couple of segments, but I'm glad that he reminded me today that I could get this in. Wanted to remain anonymous, but here's the question. This listener is interested in juicing raw cannabis, but says, I'm having trouble gathering sensible info. I saw a YouTube video where the guy said you need a plant a day. I'm not sure who could produce that in a small home grow. So the question is, how much raw cannabis do you need on a daily basis? And could it be used in a Vitamix as opposed to a juicer where you'd lose all the fiber?
It's a curious question, and unfortunately I'm speaking out of my hat here a little bit because we don't have any published data on this. The notion that raw cannabis juiced has some kind of special powers that we wouldn't have, say, from cured cannabis has no empirical support. Nevertheless, if you're a big fan of juicing, as he's pointing out, the regular juicers tend to keep the fiber out, the Vitamix tends to keep the fiber in. It just does not sound like a pleasant experience to throw cannabis raw plant into the Vitamix, whip it up, and then try to drink it. I honestly don't know what to say, and I'm not sure what magical properties these people are anticipating. I feel like if THC and the other cannabinoids are the thing you really want exposure to, obviously a tincture or, God forbid, vaporizing the plant would probably do just as well, if not better, as far as getting that kind of exposure. If there are other magical properties to the plant that we haven't identified that are only present in juicing, I'm afraid we just don't have any data to show that that's absolutely necessary.
So we don't have any way of really, you know, making an estimate of how much you would need because we don't really know how much you would need at this point.
I think the tacit assumption that you'd need any may even be questionable. So it's just kind of a stuck situation.
Okay. And this is a fairly new thing that I'm hearing about recently, this idea of raw cannabis and juicing that some people are talking about. So very fascinating. I'll keep asking people as I go out on the road to these different events and find out more people who know about this, and we'll get you some better answers. You're listening to our Cannabis Q&A segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can call in live, too, if you want to get your question in that way. Our phone number is 971-533-7111. We have a question from the chat room that asks, my sister's symptoms from Huntington's disease are progressing. Could cannabis help her in any way?
We only have 4 published case studies on this, and they're not very encouraging. Huntington's chorea, some of the other basically brain-related diseases that have to do with a progressive deterioration of brain structure is not responding as well to cannabis as, say, some of the things that are actually a product of an oxidation thing, where we know THC does tend to decrease oxidation. It's a powerful antioxidant along with some of the other cannabinoids. These are more about the degeneration of cells in the brain themselves, and it's just a tougher thing to deal with, and we just don't have the evidence to suggest that cannabis is really much help.
Okay, and that kind of follows along with another question we were getting in here about traumatic brain injuries, and if we knew anything about cannabinoids being able to help regain function from any brain lesions you might get from something like a concussion.
It turns out, it's only helpful if it's administered almost immediately after the initial damage. So the cannabinoids can have some helpful properties, at least in some of these animal models, but only if they're administered immediately.
Would that go to say then that some sort of cannabinoid dose might be in the EMT of the future's ambulance?
As crazy as that sounds, and I know, the notion of, you fall off your bike and then the guy shows up and hands you the vaporizer is a little too comic for words, but there is something at least suggestive in the animal literature saying that this could be a productive line of research.
No, we can't have that. We'll have Ganja John falling off his bike on purpose all the time. All right, we've got other questions coming into our chat room as well. If you don't get the time to get into the chat room or call in for your question, or if you just want to remain anonymous, you can do that as well. You can send your questions by email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And if you give us your permission, we'll even can use your question on the show so other people can benefit from the experience. So I had a question, Dr. Mitch, because, of course, I just got back from Seattle Hemp Fest, and I hope you're proud of me because I came back without my typical Seattle Hemp Fest sunburn with that little line across my head where the hat is. So
I really got to hand it to you, and believe me, your skin is thanking you right now.
I know. I'm very, very happy. Got the SPF 50 working on. But, of course, the big talk all weekend was about the whole I-502 and per se DUIDs, and people agree to disagree on certain things about that. But one thing that frustrates me is to hear people spouting off about DUI science, body chemistry science, things that are demonstrably false or very highly unlikely, and using it as a scare tactic. So I wanted you to address, if you could, this scare tactic that I heard, which was, you know, with the 502, it has a zero tolerance for anybody below the age of 21 with regard to their DUI. And they were, you know, implying that someone who was sitting next to somebody smoking a joint just through a contact high, through secondhand smoke, could end up then getting a DUI and failing a test because the secondhand smoke could trip a drug test for active THC in the blood. I'm just wondering how accurate or inaccurate that might have been.
As it turns out, that's not accurate. I'm no fan of these, nanograms per whatever measures. I much prefer a roadside sobriety test that suggests that you're actually impaired on psychomotor tasks, not because you have some substance in any of your fluids. But in order to get even that, some of the lower numbers, some of those 5 nanograms per milliliter numbers, you really do have to have used a tincture or eaten an edible or essentially been in the hot box from hell. So, I mean, if everybody was smoking and you were all underneath a bucket, yes, then maybe you could say I didn't actually smoke and I tested positive under those circumstances. But you would have to inhale the plant. I mean, it's not likely to get a positive test without actual exposure to THC.
Yeah, and that's one of the frustrating things is there's a lot of fear out there about this science and fear of DUIs, and it's frustrating to me because it feels as if some people are finally coming to the realization that you could get a DUI for this stuff when that has existed for a long, long time. And of course, what we would like to see, like what Dr. Mitch mentioned, is let's have this work scientifically. The reason that we did blood alcohol, the reason we got breathalyzers, because the science shows that actually works. You know, people who drink, the more they drink, the more impaired they get, and it's pretty reliable how impaired they're going to get. But cannabis doesn't work that way. It's a completely different thing. Yet politically, we're kind of stuck with this frame or this model that makes people think that there should be some sort of breathalyzer for pot. So, Dr. Mitch, from a cultural point of view, how are we going to flip that? How are we going to convince people out there that know nothing about marijuana and want to compare it to alcohol, especially when we've said treat it like alcohol? How do we convince them that impairment testing is the way to go and not blood testing?
I've actually been digging around in the persuasion literature trying to have some kind of novel insights about this, and I'm hoping that people do understand the roadside sobriety test for alcohol being a good correlate of alcohol impairment, so a roadside sobriety test for cannabis would be a good correlate of any cannabis-related driving impairment. Now, we've talked to Paul Armentano about this time and again, and in truth, there is not the outrageous dramatic driving impairment even after recent use of cannabis, but saying so, of course, gets people a little too freaked out. But if I say, look, if somebody can't walk a straight line, then certainly we don't want them driving. Doesn't that make sense? And they say, yeah. And I say, well, that's a hell of a lot cheaper, and the cheaper argument seems to fly, than trying to take somebody's fluids and get them analyzed. And I think this financial idea that, look, I can train a policeman once and he can do this a million times, or we could pay $15 every single time we want to test somebody, that's starting to make some headway, and I feel like that may be our step in the right direction. But I want to emphasize that 502 is not about busting people, it's about not busting people. And yes, there is this caveat in order to make sure that the thing would test, but that's how we're going to get this law passed. And I feel like once we've got that on the books, working out these details will be fine-tuning. The big step is going to be getting this passed in the first place, and that's where we should all be getting behind it.
All right, Dr. Mitch, thanks for those wise words, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday in Cannabis Q&A. Thanks for joining us.
Looking forward to it. Bye now.
All right, when we come back, we've got some more video from Seattle Hemp Fest. Yep. Danny Danko, Keith Stropp, and Lynette Shaw. Stick around. The Russ Belville Show will be right back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there. And we'd come to play and I'll just hold the ride.
Yarr! The Army Pirates here!
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back. We're going to turn things over to our Seattle Hemp Fest video. Enjoy.
Hi. I'm very happy to see you here because I'm a speaker here year after year. Yep. And every year I come here, there's usually five or six people telling me I'm going to go to hell.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering, I mean, I can obviously read what it says here, but if you could tell us why you're here and if you're, are you with a group or just personally?
Just by myself, but I mean, you've identified why I'm here.
Yeah.
It's in response to the people who say, hey, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah.
I had some friends when I first started doing this a few years ago who were a little concerned I was being over the top.
Yeah.
The first time I was out, the Christian sign said, repent or else with flames on the bottom. And I thought, you know, in terms of being offensive, I just don't stand it. Don't hold a candle to these guys. So.
No kidding. This is great. That one, we got the Lincoln.
There's another side, too.
And that one. All right, let's spin the side there. Oh, this one works for me. People who don't want their beliefs laughed at shouldn't have such funny beliefs. Has there ever been a religion with the prophetic accuracy and reliability of science? Carl Sagan, jet propulsion scientist, literally a rocket scientist, and daily marijuana smoker.
I didn't know that.
Yes, Carl Sagan in 1958 or 9 first smoked marijuana. He wrote about the experience in an essay called Mr. X,
right,
to his friend Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who's one of the pioneers in medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Just look up Carl Sagan, Mr. X.
Yeah.
You'll find it on the internet, and it's a fantastic recount from a scientist's perspective,
right,
of what it was like to smoke marijuana and how it affected his perceptions and how he solved problems better and came up with new insights on cannabis.
Yeah.
I'm Russ, by the way.
Bob.
Bob, thank you for doing what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Is that a website or anything that we...
Seattle Atheist.
SeattleAtheist.org?
I think it's .org, yeah.
So SeattleAtheist.org.
Yeah, thanks for being here, man. They're a local group, so check them out.
All right.
Thank you.
It's Danny Danko.
Yes, High Times Medical Cannabis Cup is coming 1 month from now to Seattle for the first time ever, so we're excited. We're hyping that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
How's the cookbook going?
Good. It's going great.
Yeah, tell people how to get it.
Oh, just go to hightimes.com, the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook.
Fantastic. Happy Hemp Fest.
Yeah.
And of course, right next to High Times, you couldn't have High Times without Normal.
Hello,
Keith
Russ.
Strop is here.
Nice to see you, folks.
And we've got Kevin Oliver from Washington Normal. And we've got George Orbacher from Board of Directors. So Washington is well represented in what's going to be a very interesting Hemp Fest.
Both Washington.
We're looking forward to passing 502 here in Washington this year.
Legalization is happening.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting because... Every other time we're at Hemp Fest, it's always let's get together and vote and get legalization on the ballot. Now legalization's on the ballot, and it's going to be the most contentious Hemp Fest yet. How interesting is that, huh?
Well, it's unfortunate, and I think it does confuse the general public, as you noticed on the front page of the Seattle Times this morning. They're saying, how come half of Hemp Fest wants to legalize pot and half of them are against it this time? you know, I wish people could stand back a half a step and take the big picture. It would be a momentous change in national policy if one state had the courage to legalize marijuana and confront the federal government, and that's what Washington State is about to do. It will change the face of marijuana policy.
Absolutely. So, you'll all be speaking here at HempFest, right?
Yes.
All right, we'll be there to catch that, and we'll get it all posted on online for you. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Russ.
Hey everybody, Radical Russ backstage here behind the Hemposium, and one of the things about Seattle Hemp Fest is that the backstage crew are fantastic. What they provide for the speakers and the VIPs that show up to these events are phenomenal. In fact, to tell you the truth, I couldn't make it through Hemp Fest without them because I can't afford festival food. And a lot of this, you know, they really do a lot of work on making sure there's stuff that's gluten-free, stuff that's vegan, stuff that's organic, stuff that's only mined by elves, you know, every possible dietary need you might have, they're going to have something good for you. And it's always nice, you know, when what's going on outside is like deep fried, oil based and everything, you get back here and you get something healthy, so that's really good stuff. You always have to ask though whether or not the brownies are medicated.
They are not.
They are not. That's one of the things about living in one of these medical marijuana states here out in the Pacific Northwest, West Coast, is you can't always trust the confections, or maybe you can. Anyway, we'll see more of you here at Seattle Hemp Fest. Thanks for joining us.
Because I had the first regulated dispensary in the nation, that for 15 years we had absolutely no problems whatsoever, no complaints from any authorities or anybody at all. We saved lots of people from suffering. We pulled hundreds out of jail and made sure that they didn't go to jail for their legal medical marijuana. We had a system that held up in courts. Everybody was happy. The Board of Supervisors, the DA, the local sheriff, the chief of police of Fairfax. We had absolute marijuana peace in Marin County. And apparently, the target was still on me here. Because my landlord was the first landlord to have his land seized to make sure that my dispensary was immediately removed. And they held his land for 5 months and scared him and tortured him and threatened him with everything. He's 75 years old. And he had to sign papers swearing to never rent to me for the rest of his life to get his land back. And they pointed to him as the example of what they were going to do to every other landlord in the nation, which caused hundreds of landlords to close dispensaries all over California and in other parts of the nation. So it was a shocking, terrible thing. Luckily, well, I don't know if it was luckily, I was not raided. I did not get beat up. I didn't catch a case. I don't have a trial. I don't have charges. That's good, Lynette. You don't have to go to court. There's no charges. But with a jury of my peers, I think I might have had a better chance. They sent the U.S. Treasury to my little Bank of America in Fairfax and threatened to yank their federal charter if they didn't immediately kick out all my business bank accounts for 15 years. They sent the DOJ after my landlord, and my landlord's bank, Chase, got threatened by the DOJ. It was the IRS. We're still fighting over that. Everything they could have in their quiver, they tested on me first. And I guess they say that you you're as powerful as your enemies are. Well, so I guess I've done more work than quite a few, and I've worked very, very hard and done it for the right reasons. But here I am after 15 years with no job, and since I'm a patient, I'm not a grower. I actually never made that much money, just my bills. So now I'm scrambling to survive, and it's probably the most unfair thing that I could think that would happen. Last year, I moderated this panel. I was in tears. These women and these terrible things that have happened to everybody. And I thought, gee, after 15 years, I have forged an island of safety. I'm going to be okay. All my people are okay. This is the model for the nation. This is how it's going to go. I supported Obama with all my heart. And I was betrayed by that love and that support and that effort and that belief. So I went on Fox News and went Republican for Ron Paul nationally. But I'm a libertarian, actually. I'm supporting Gary Johnson because Gary and Jim Gray are good friends, and they are the only ones I know that are talking with any sense for the direction of America. And my vote, I know Obama's going to win, and Romney's scary. And so I know that my vote counts in my heart. And I'm voting for Gary Johnson because that's the only way I have to get back, really, is to vote with my heart and tell everybody about it and tell everybody how unfair and impossible the situation has become. And we have to wait, go to the Supreme Court, hopefully the ASA case. I've got a case with National Normal going to the Supreme Court to make them look at the gosh darn medical evidence. Let's look at the Constitution. What about human rights? What about our rights as Americans to not be under this duress constantly? So I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. That's the only problem. And I certainly have not enjoyed a steady income for the last 7 months, and that's been very scary. And it's not what I thought my life was going to be like when I was sitting here last year saying, hey, everybody, I've got a plan and I've got a method that works. It didn't work. And it's a dead end, and it's very scary right now. And I can't see the future on this. I'm not sure what's going to happen. But I think we just need to keep fighting and keep bringing the truth forward, because the truth will set us free. The truth's going to come out at some point. They won't give me my day in court, but I guess, you know, that's what it's supposed to be right now. I just can speak about it. Yeah, I gave away a lot of marijuana to a lot of sick people and helped out a lot of people, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I started with Dennis Brown, and I'm from the first staff of the first Compassion Club in all history. I'm one of the acolytes of the spark of the movement. And I've always been honest, and I've always, you know, worked very hard. And I know that a lot of people trust me and believe in me and know I tell the truth. So maybe that's why I'm so dangerous. Is that why they came and ruined my whole life? They wouldn't beat me up and give me a court case, but they ruined everything else in my life. Okay. Well, I'm effective, and I tell the truth, and when I speak, people listen. And I appreciate that, because I appreciate everybody listening to me today. And I love being here, and I love everybody for keeping working, even though I'm crippled from working right now. And I'm playing music instead, and then I'm speaking about what happened to me. I'm outlining a book because it's such an impossible situation. How do we solve this situation? I'm usually a good problem solver. That's what I do. I solve problems. I make plans, and all things come together, and it works. And my plan did work. Now I don't have a plan, and I'm telling people about what happened, and I warn people what could happen, and I think we're in very dangerous times, and I just want everyone to be very, very, very careful, because we will win eventually, but we've taken a lot of steps back here lately, and it started with me. Lucky me. And I want to thank everybody. I see a lot of my friends here in the audience. Thank you for supporting me, and I'm getting phone calls and emails. Are you okay? Well, sort of, you know. I've got to figure out where I fit into the world now. My safety, my little island of safety has disappeared, and I'm working on the Bluzetta band, and I'm working on this boy.
One of the saddest panels I had to cover. I had covered Lynette Shaw's panel the year prior at Hempfest, and she was so excited. She was so excited to be going up against the federal government and standing up. And she got smacked down. You can catch that entire panel online at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/radicalrus. But we gotta go. That's all the time we got for hour one. So for Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here. Stay tuned for hour two. We're going to give you the full panel from the Legalize It movie, the documentary on Prop 19. Also, going to give you a look at the Herb Age Designs booth with Herb Thrasher. Stick around. Hour two is up next. For those of you listening on podcast, thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And then you'll see, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.